I'm an engineer by background, and I'm interested in results and not in how they have been made and also not in what something is called. When it comes to the business perspective, I think AI should be kind of be the last resort, because of the possible solutions, it tends to be the most expensive one. And as long as results are the same, the cheapest solution provides the best profits. We can have training data that represents the real world, but we actually kind of want to introduce bias because real world is too grim. Like, I think you must have heard of the Twitter chatbots that by 5 minutes of self-learning became super racist. When designing the solution from scratch, one needs to keep in mind that if it should be productized, it needs a team which is multidisciplinary and a lot larger than the one data scientist who perhaps made a cool proof of concept.
Welcome to Fork, Pull, Merge, Push. This is a show about topics developers obsess over with guest engineers from around the world.
Hi everyone, my name is Esko Lahti.
And I'm Anna Fröblom.
And you are listening to Fork, Pull, Merge, Push. Anna and I are software engineers at Reactor, and in this podcast we talk with brilliant developers about things they are passionate about. As simple as that.
Okay. Hi Esko, how are you feeling today?
Pretty fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. It's been a busy day, but we're here now and we are about to talk about artificial intelligence. So we're going to try to figure out today what artificial intelligence actually means, why and why not to use it. So AI for sure attracts a lot of attention, right? It attracts wonderment and maybe even some fear. So let's try to figure out what do we actually mean when we talk about AI, and why it's sometimes even more important to actually realize the problem before jumping into the technical solution. Joining us today to make sense of AI is Henrik Aalto, a business-savvy data scientist from Reactor. Welcome, Henrik.
Thank you, Anna. Great to be here.
So, before we jump into AI, let's talk about a little bit about you. So, Henrik, how could you introduce yourself in 30 seconds?
In 30 seconds, and now I lost 10 of them. So... Yeah, I'm a data scientist or a data science generalist. I think I'm stronger on bridging the gap between business and data and technology instead of doing some super deep technical and cool stuff.
How would you explain to your family what you do for work?
That's a good question, because I do quite many and various things. On one day, I might be simply doing some software development, and that might have actually nothing to do with data. So that's like coding in layman's terms. On another day, I might be doing more like a short-term roadmap to build a solution to a complex problem. And then on the third day, I'll be doing something very different, being the specialist in sales discussions or visiting a podcast.
That sounds really interesting. Like, you won't have a boring day at work when you have all those opportunities.
Yeah, at least those are rare.
I guess, like, how and even more importantly, why did you end up doing what you're doing?
That's a long journey. Initially, I studied mechanical engineering, and during my studies, I realized that actually Well, applied mathematics is a different field, but I realized that maths applied to the extent that data science is actually a lot more interesting to me than some like physical machines. And then I switched my major, started studying operations research and data science, and here I am.
Okay, going deeper into the topic of AI, could you tell us from a developer's perspective how your work is meaningful and what you actually do when you talk about AI?
Oh, those are two very different questions, but I'll start from the first one. So what interests and fascinates me about AI is that at its best, it allows us to let machines do the repetitive or boring or like cognitively demanding tasks. And doing that well, we can let humans focus on what they are good at and where they outperform machines.
So what do we actually mean when we say artificial intelligence?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
That was the second question, and it's difficult. So I want the beginning by saying that I think there isn't even a consensus of what AI is. And it's an opinionated question. People have strongly different opinions on it. And so what I say is something that someone other might not agree. But anyways, I'm an engineer by background, and I'm interested in results and not in how they have been made, and also not in what something is called. And from that background, I think I'm liberal towards using the AI term, and I like to explain it in a way that non-AI software development is something in which the developer hard codes some business logic, switch cases and if-thens and so forth. And in my opinion, as soon as a piece of software contains some business logic that has not been hard-coded but learned from some sort of data, I think we can call it intelligent and a piece of AI software.
Is there a way to categorize that even deeper, or is it just everything is intelligence from that point on?
Well, there are so many perspectives to this question. So I think one way to think is that AI is an umbrella, and under it are subfields like machine learning, robotics, computer vision, natural language processing, speech recognition, so forth. And for instance, computer vision has been making progress at very fast pace. It's becoming productized. It's already being discussed that whether it's nowadays that much AI instead of just importing some ready-made libraries. But I think at least from today's point of view, we can say that computer vision is just one subfield of AI.
If we talk about your work specifically, then could you drop some examples of like different AI-related works that you are involved in or have been?
Yeah, sure. So, well, I'm mostly a generalist when it comes to data science or AI, but my strong points are around optimization and classical machine learning, and then in designing the solutions to business problems. Because I think, I don't know, one could call it like some solution architecture or whatnot, but that's where I spend some time in. And sometimes the best solution is to not do any AI, but some easier thing instead.
Fun fact of the day. If computer programming was a country, it would be the second most diverse country in the world by the number of languages used, with over 700 languages. Pretty impressive, isn't it? We at Reactor are technology agnostic, which means that we are constantly looking for talented developers of the most diverse tech backgrounds and walks of life. Make sure to check out our open positions in the US, Finland, the Netherlands, Portugal, and Japan. We'll add the link in the description to this episode.
What is it actually that attracts us to AI? When you think about like those business cases, what draws us there? Like, we want to definitely use AI in this case.
Well, I think many data science practitioners or AI practitioners are fascinated about just building those things. They're like, I don't know, one could think of artists who like to do things in some technique they prefer, and that sometimes drives them to use AI. When it comes to the business perspective, I think AI should be kind of be the last resort, because of the possible solutions, it tends to be the most expensive one. And as long as results are the same, the cheapest solution provides the best profits.
I want to go a little bit deeper into the kind of a business design or the business aspect of it. Like, how can we recognize that a certain problem needs an AI solution?
Yeah, that's a good question. If we think of AI solutions, we can think of, or one way to think is to imagine two different dimensions, the like intelligence or complexity in the business logic, and the other one is autonomy of the system. And having those dimensions in mind, we can start to chunk business problems into smaller pieces. Think that, does it require some very repetitive tasks, or is it processing something very multidimensional? Is there loads of just big loads of data involved, and so forth? I think on a higher level, it's difficult to give two good general guidelines, because as we discussed, the covered solution areas are so wide, and it quite much depends on where we are thinking and talking about.
So it really sounds like you need business understanding in that place to know, like, what's the next step.
Yeah, exactly. And personally, I'm interested in that, as from one point of view, one needs to have some understanding of how business makes money. And then one needs to have an idea of possible solutions. So I think already in normal software development, there are often a number of different solution architectures to reach the end goal. And understanding both the solution space and the business case is essential in building the or designing the solution.
Do you have any examples of like situations where AI would be the right solution?
Quite often when we introduce AI to some existing business, we also need to change the ways of working, because it's not just replacing one task from between, but instead the human workers need to also change their processes. And that's one thing to keep in mind. So yeah, think of squeezing a toothpaste tube. So in the beginning, you can just have a lightweight grip. You can always get a nice amount of toothpaste, like profit out of your business model. And then the more you squeeze, the harder it gets. And you can almost always, I think we agree, you can almost always squeeze one more portion of toothpaste out of the tube, like using some twisted two-hand technique and putting in some cool AI. But that kind of requires that the profits are worth it. And for instance, if the scale of the business is small, we can think of some small car repair shops. Even if they could improve some revenue by some percentage points by, I don't know, plugging in a super technical chatbot to their websites, the scale of their business wouldn't kind of carry the cost of implementing the solution. So from one hand, yeah, there are some things that cannot be solved with AI. And on the other hand, the more technical or challenging it is, approximately the larger your business needs to be so that you can pay back the cost.
And I guess it also comes to, like, if you do build a AI solution, how intelligent it is. Like, if you can, you know, get away with like a low intelligence level, that's probably cheaper than going full in.
Yeah, exactly. I think, well, I'm not a big fan of chatbots, like as a consumer or a customer, but I think it's a good example here, because the easiest chatbots can be made with some rule machines, like switch content of the message, and in case something mortgage is involved, then direct to that customer service agent and so forth. And then I think the other end of the spectrum is to have some tailor-made natural language processing in the chatbot. And for the user, it perhaps doesn't even change that much the experience.
Is it easy to communicate, like, as an AI expert with the other people in the development team, like what the goals of the team should be, assuming like not everybody are very comfortable having an AI as part of the product they're building?
Yeah, I think the communication is not trivial, because quite many AI things are very abstract, and like the terms are interconnected or concepts are interconnected, and if one starts from scratch, it takes a bit of time to adjust one's mind to it. I think a good analogy would be to have one functional programmer in a team, and the other ones would be pure object-oriented programmers and would need to do some functional stuff based on the one's instructions.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Continuing, one more question about being as part of a software development team. What would you wish that every developer would know about AI?
I think the fundamentals of it, to approximately to the same extent as of any other related field, be it simply business or service design or UX or whatnot, but just understanding the core concepts is, I think, enough for someone who is not specialized in it.
How about then talking with, like, because in a team you have the developers, you have someone else, you probably have some testers, but then you have the business side. How about the communication with the business side then?
I think the problem is almost as challenging as when communicating with developers. There are also quite many data scientists who perhaps are like actively not too much interested in how business works, and more like we discussed earlier, they're more like artists. And that especially is a challenge, because whereas some art fans are willing to pay money just to get some cool techniques on their wall, few businesses are. And I think a good analogy here is, well, oil drilling is perhaps has been uncool for a good while, but it's something similar has happened there. So some years back, Arctic oil drilling was becoming a thing, and the engineering problems related are, I think, interesting for an engineer. The sea conditions are super harsh. You have ice fields drifting, and those loads need to be tolerated and so forth. But as other techniques like the shale oil thing, pumping it out of the soil, became cheaper, I think Arctic oil drilling became business-wise essentially unfeasible. And the same thing needs to be kept in mind with AI, that even though something is technically super cool and challenging and whatnot, if there are remarkably cheap options available, no one's going to pay for it.
I think that's good advice for any developer too, because we as developers tend to also be attracted to the, you know, our own work and the complex solutions sometimes. So
yes.
Yeah.
The functional programming analog you went into earlier brings me many memories of like introducing complex things regarding functional programming to a code base, which in my case didn't make any sense bringing into the code base.
Yeah.
Instead, a simpler solution would have been sufficient, and like considering what other people working on the project in every case know or don't know will affect their choice that you need to make.
Yeah. And like we discussed, many AI fields are developing super fast. Like they're readily and freely available libraries for computer vision and natural language processing, like OpenCVs and YOLOs and BERTs, are so good that unless you have a multi-billion business, it's just not feasible to do artisan models starting from scratch. And yeah, I think that the same challenge applies as to other development, that people should keep in mind that what's available and use that to at least some reasonable extent as the starting point.
So when new technologies in like field of software development in general emerge, they are of course not mainstream technologies right from the start. And most often in that phase of time, the experts of that field are a bit in the technologist or in the artist side. And when the thing becomes more mainstream, then you will get maybe more people like you who are like more thinking of the business and like kind of popularizing the topic, be it, for example, AI then.
Yeah.
So I guess we will just need some years of time and more like technologies and more like development in the field of AI in general. And then I guess we will then see more this kind of non-hardcore technologist type of people developing AI solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like in terms of asset computer vision or natural language processing, almost all solutions nowadays use those pre-trained models as their starting points and then get their desired products or solutions by retraining or fine-tuning the existing starting points. And that just enables getting even better results.
Now, thinking about a situation, if we imagine that we've validated our use case, it's feasible to use AI for our problem. What does it actually require that we do? What does it mean to utilize AI?
Yeah, well, I'll actually like sidetrack a bit to the topic of having a team and developers and AI practitioners and so forth. So some employees at Google have written a very nice and I think illustrative paper on the hidden technical debt of machine learning solutions. And I think that's perhaps one of the core things to keep in mind when designing or developing an AI solution from scratch to some use case. And the key in that paper is that in quite many productionized AI systems, the amount of AI like work or code base or whatnot is actually quite small. And then there's tons of pre-processing and post-processing data or requests and then there's infrastructures and user interfaces and service design and whatnot required. So when designing the solution from scratch, one needs to keep in mind that if it should be productized, it needs a team which is multidisciplinary and a lot larger than the one data scientist who perhaps made a cool proof of concept.
I would also, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about biases in regarding artificial intelligence. So it would also mean that the team should be diverse, right? Because the data that you're using to train the model and then all the train the system, it needs to be diverse, right?
Yeah, this is actually an interesting topic. So bias is a challenging term because it has like a very clear statistic or statistical definition. And then it's also used a bit more broadly in common speech. Anyways, it's very easy to imagine smart software solutions that categorically perform not as well for some group of customers or users compared to others. Like just a few days ago, I again faced some articles related to how cars are less safe for other people than 170 some centimeter long males. So yeah, the same phenomena is present in AI solutions as well. And there are like at least two or three core points from which it arises. Let us imagine that we are building a solution that detects handwritten digits. So converts images of numbers to numbers on some program. And let us assume that our model is perfect. So given some training data, which is images of numbers with the correct numbers they are, let us assume that the model fits itself to that data perfectly and performs perfectly well on similar data. And that digit classification is actually one of the classic examples of computer vision. Now assume we gather training data by collecting samples from 20 individuals, writing some numbers. And it's quite likely that all those numbers have been written by right-handed people, because left-handed, like me, I think there are some 5% of us in general population. And yeah, so if we train our perfect model on that small training data, it's quite likely that it will not detect any of the left-hand written digits. Okay, this is an exaggeration, but anyways. So there's this bias in the model. It's discriminative. So how to then reduce the bias? The easy way, of course, or the like intuitive one, would be to just collect more training data to gather samples also from left-handed people. But let us assume we need those 20 samples from also left-handed ones to get perfect model. And if there are 5% of left-handed in the population, by picking random people from the street, write some digits, we would need, 400 samples to get 20 left-handed ones. So if some customer group is remarkably smaller than some other, it can easily become super expensive to reduce the bias in the model by simply gathering a representative data set. Another way to solve that would be to augment the training data. And it's actually quite widely used in computer vision. So we can again start from those 20 samples and then do all kinds of classic image processing tricks to them, like rotate them clockwise or counterclockwise, do some warping or widening or lengthening without keeping the ratio, perhaps blurring or so forth. And yeah, by doing that manipulation and copying the training data with some random manipulation, we can come up with a situation that based on the 20 actual samples, we are able to train a model that works perfectly well for also left-handed writers. Yeah, so like two ways to solve the training data issue would approximately be to gather more or to manipulate it. And that in a way does not require to have a left-handed pupil in the team. Of course, having one probably increases the probability that they understand what's the reason, but it's not like a strict requirement.
Interesting. I think that's like, it's really interesting to see like that there are ways to solve this and multiple ways. So it's kind of, to me, it kind of brings hope that in that the situation will, I think, maybe, hopefully, get better also in the future in regards of biases and the AI systems.
Then they like, that was the first one of the two or three core reasons. The second, and that's like more challenging, is that we can have training data that represents the real world, but we actually kind of want to introduce bias because real world is too grim. Like, I think you must have heard of the Twitter chatbots that by 5 minutes of self-learning became super racist. And that's kind of the opposite problem. Your training data represents real world, but you want your model to behave like the real world does. Then the model training needs to be directed one way or another.
I wonder how Tesla will make their cars fully autonomous versions drive. Will they like behave like we humans do, which is to bend the rules here and there or play a good citizen?
Yeah, that's like, and if we want to kind of direct the model one way or another, we end up in the third challenge regarding the bias in model performance. So quite often when building a model, one needs to do some decisions. Like binary classification is, I think, the easiest example. That, let us say we try to classify left and right-handed people from the digits. It's possible that, and the common case is, that the two categories kind of overlap. And then you need to decide whether you want to have more false positives or false negatives, or to draw the line somewhere in between. And that's eventually usually a human decision. And yeah, having a diverse team that thinks more than just some accuracy scores is, I think, an advantage there.
And how about then the buy-in from the users? What do you need to do in order to make sure that the thing that you're building will be used?
Yeah, if bias is one of the like actually interesting topics, I think this buy-in is another one. So I think one of the most important factors to increase it is to include the actual users of the solution in the development and in the design. Because as we discussed quite often, bringing in an AI solution also changes the user's way of working or doing things. And having them on board, helping in the design, but also in understanding that that will simply free them some time to focus on more relevant things is important in getting the buy-in. Another one, which is very different route to get that, but interesting is to, so there's been some research on the inner speech of robots, be they physical or like programmatic. And quite many humans have the constant monologue going in on their heads. Implementing that same to robots and then letting the robots also share some of that inner speech to the user helps the users interact with the robot, understand why ending up in some decisions, why not.
Sounds like it might make them more human-like.
Yeah. So I think explainable AI was a cool term some years ago, and I think the term already passed the hype cycle. But anyways, having those decision support systems, software robots, explain why they did something is beneficial instead of them being black boxes.
Okay, so could you, Henrik, I appreciate that you went to the lengths of explaining the multiple kind of phases of AI, but still asking this sort of general question. I know it's practically impossible for you to answer, but where is like AI development going next? What do you think?
Like from one point of view, this is actually surprisingly easy to answer. And I think the commoditization is a like very strong trend, similarly to other software development. So things that require today artisan models will probably be readily imported libraries after some years, meaning artisan work will be able to do even more.
Okay. So you kind of get those proverbial face recognition libraries from like publicly available and...
Yeah, might be. At least in the field of natural language processing, I think the area of being able to handle multiple languages in the same model is developing fast. So some surprisingly nice improvements can perhaps happen.
Good. Thanks, Henrik, for joining us today. It's been a very interesting discussion we've had. I think I learned a lot about AI today and also about the importance of actually validating the business case without jumping to the first to the solution.
Yeah, and thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. Please share this episode with your friends and colleagues, and make sure to give us a follow on social media. All the relevant links, including the references from this episode, you can find in the description. Let's be in touch, and until next time.